Welcome to Vita Poetica Journals podcast. We're an online journal featuring creative work explored through a spiritual lens and a publication of the Vita Poetica Arts and Faith Collective. Today we have a short story for you by James Roderick Burns. It's called Standing Water. This story does have some subtle references to physical abuse and demonic possession, but it is not graphic. James Roderick Burns is the author of one flash fiction collection, To Say Nothing of the Dog, and five collections of short-form poetry, most recently Crows at Dusk. A collection of four novellas, The Unregulated Heart, is also forthcoming in summer 2024. His stories have twice been nominated for the Pushcart Prize, and he serves as staff reader in poetry for Plowshares. He can be found on Twitter at James Roderick B, and his newsletter, A Bunch of Fives, offers one free published story a fortnight. And you can find that at abunchoffives.substack.com. Here's James Roderick Burns.
Hello. This is James Roderick Burns. The following story, or perhaps at around 1,500 words, the outside edge of flash fiction, is dark and contains references to domestic violence and to the demonic. Nonetheless, I hope you enjoy it. Standing Water. Everything happens for a reason, said her friend Mrs. Ward. She hadn't known her long, a year or two at most, and was still finding her way with the older woman's declarative certainties. She was housekeeper to the priest of the church next door and seemed to have imbibed a sort of unwavering authority in practically every matter. Even this? Why, yes, though I'll grant you it's a bit unusual. I could ask Father McKinnon if you like. No, that's all right. I'm sure it will resolve itself, somehow. They spoke over a low spot in the back fence where the hedge had succumbed to an infestation of creeper. It's rather rough treatment leaving a scorched area where the hedge growth never resumed. She felt certain middle-class Englishness would bring about the desired resolution, eventually. Thank you, though. I'd best be getting on. Of course, dear. I'll see you later. Mrs. Ward disappeared behind the section of healthy growth masking the back door. The woman remained for a moment, arms across her chest, thinking. She stood a few feet from where her husband had fallen and died, clawing chest and neck. And she had watched him. There hadn't been many bright spots since, though there should have been. Every face unslapped, every forearm untwisted was a beacon of hope, of promise so golden-tinged and fantastical she could barely comprehend it. Now and again she paused on the threshold of work, looked out at early winter street lamps pushing at darkness, the first flurry of snow, and felt the stirrings of hope. But like a lighter wicking at fumes, it soon clicked out. Instead, she found pools of water where none should have been, on the countertop, despite no taps having run, bathroom floor beside a dry bath, over the hardwood floor of the living room, where hours earlier she'd noticed it needing a shine. The water was dark, oily almost, but as far as she could tell, ordinary water. The J-cloths she started buying from the pound shop, soaking it up quite satisfactorily. She could hardly bear to touch them afterwards, balled them up in gloved hands, threw them away. The clerk asked if she had a plumbing problem. "With all them rags and what have you," he said. This time she'd cleaned out the shelf. When she got home, she realised a plumber might be a good idea. He arrived reassuringly middle-aged and boiler-suited, refused her offer of tea, and began a methodical inspection of the areas she'd found water. He peered minutely at the counters, disappeared under the sink, lay alongside the bath, popped out the side panel to inspect the piping. In the front room, he tapped all round the plaques. In the hall, passed his hands over the parquet tiles, removed a slat of metal with a curved handle from his pocket. "You mind?" he asked, not waiting. He slotted the tool in beside the outside tile. A couple of tiles eased up like loosened teeth. "Seen it before now and then in these Victorians. Ran the pipes every which way, the queer buggers. Ended up with stuff spraying out where you'd least expect. But the base was dry, the bath too, the counters." He scratched his head on the hardwood floor. "Blowed if I know what's causing it, missus," the man said. That's all right. How much do I owe you? What? Nothing. No charge. Yeah, only sorry I couldn't. He went muttering away down the path. The next morning, she found a new pool, blacker this time, by the washer she hadn't been able to operate. The following week, she met Mrs. Ward pegging out her wash. It was Monday, as always, and she'd allowed herself a rare day home from the business. Mrs. Ward had corrected her the year before when she hung out on a Wednesday. Now the older woman bustled down the walk with a basket full of damp black clothes, a velvet peg bag across her bosom. "Hello, dear," she said. "Hello," the woman replied. She stood well to the left of the spot, no basket in her own hands. She'd taken her washing to a fluff and fold place, hating herself, and unwilling to open the laundry room door. Mrs. Ward looked her over briefly, then started to peg out. "I hope you don't mind," she said, "but I had a word with the father after all." "Oh, yes." For a moment, she rode the tail of an anger flare before it fizzled to earth. "I had a plumber in. He found nothing at all." "Well, Father McKinnon said, in light of your troubles, that in his deliverance work, he's become aware of a certain type of entity that's attracted to damaged souls, that feeds on them. A clinging spirit, he called it, and..." But this was more than she could take on a Monday morning. "Thank you, Mrs. Ward, but I'm really not feeling well. I'll see you later." "All right, dear." She reached into the bag and swiped the peg onto the shoulder of a shirt in one fluid motion. It was an hour before the woman stopped shaking, rigid behind the living room door, from a sickening mixture of fear and rage. On Tuesday, she walked around the house, noting the occurrences on a crude sort of map before showering and going to work. All day she put on her most engaging aspect, said yes to everything, but chewed away at the thing behind her professional facade with the determination of a mouse chiseling the skirting board. At 6 o'clock, after she wrapped things up with her husband's business partner, she realized each pool had formed at the site of a particular incident, devastating on its own or through the accretion of repeat offenses, sure as an ankle sheared in a pothole. First she was terrified, then that feeling dropped abruptly, loud as a disengaging lock, and she filled with indignation, its rough edges sharpening with each breath until she had to sit down and couldn't think of leaving. How dare it? How dare it? When she got home, it was dark, and for some reason the motion center hadn't triggered. As she got the back door open, a gush of cold black water ran over her feet, out to the garden and the lawn, the borders, then on to who knew where. In the morning, she got through to the man she supposed was now her business partner. "Keith, yeah, sorry for the early call. No, everything's fine. Listen, I thought I'd be back in as normal, but something's come up. I'll need a few days, just through the end of the week, with the house. No, I'll be in Monday. Yes, see you then. Bye." For a moment, the silence of the place was uncustomed. Then she heard a slow, dripping ooze from the kitchen, she thought, the laundry room or perhaps patio through glass. She felt nails sinking to her palms. "All right, you motherfucker," she said evenly to the empty room. "Okay, fine." In the bottom of the airing cupboard, she found his toolbox, kicked it open. A hammer and chisels, a pair of snub-nosed pliers fell out. She picked up the hammer and chisels, walked to the laundry room and laid waste to the liner. Nothing rose up but dust and a few mouse droppings. She hacked the hardwood floor to pieces, pried off the bath panel and smashed out every dry, unvarnished plaque. In the entryway, lacking the plumber's prying tool, she bashed away a few tile pieces before the whole gave up its substance. After a couple of hours, she had only splinters and sweat, a few bloodied hand dabs here and there to show for her work. She looked out to the shed where they kept the edging tools and spades. She threw his tools against the wall, yanked the blouse out of her trousers. Wednesday, cursing, raising her eyes to the house, she excavated most of the borders. Nothing came. Thursday and Friday, the lawns, Saturday, the vegetable patch. The house sat blank and dry as a high beach in summer. The windows, she thought, elbowing sweat from her eyes, held a blank, defiant look, a sort of dumb insolence that drove sergeants to violence. But nothing poured forth. Only on Sunday did she begin to dig up the spot. Mrs. Ward appeared, the woman sensed but didn't see, the priest hovering anxiously behind her. Hello, dear, she said. You seem to have covered almost everything. Yes. She realized this is where she should have started. This was where it began. A trickle of greasy black water began to wind about her boots. She redoubled her efforts. Thank you. Do thank Father McKinnon for me also, won't you? That I will. A thin smile brightened her features for a moment, then was gone. By mid-afternoon, the hole was 3 feet deep, the pool washing around her thighs, clinging to her jeans like wet leather orthopedic straps. Her legs numbed, hands blistered, but she dug on. By evening, it was 5 feet deep, and she hauled herself onto the bank like a walrus breaking free from a slick. The water shivered once, then stilled. It lay silent and black, malevolent as oil. She panted, ached, groaned, but forced herself to look. In the pitchy surface shone a perfect, reflected image of the church. Lights delicate and massed, a faint, wavering yellow, and piled against the darkness, seemingly just within reach.
That was James Roderick Burns reading his short story, Standing Water. You can learn more about Vita Poetica at the website in our podcast description, www.vitapoetica.org, where you can find details on how to submit to the journal and other ways to get involved. Thanks for listening, and more soon.